Welcome to Another News, I'm Jeff Brady. Today we get a look into the mysterious death of Aliza Lamb, who went missing on January 31st, 2013. You may remember the news reports of the 21-year-old Canadian student at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, whose body was known to be found weeks later inside a water tank atop the Cecil Hotel in downtown Los Angeles on February 19th, 2013. So she went missing on January 31st, and her body was reportedly found February 19th. Maintenance workers at the Cecil Hotel discovered the body when investigating complaints from guests about the low water pressure. On February 21st, 2 days after her body was found, the coroner's office reported that they had found her death to be an accidental drowning, with bipolar disorder as a significant factor. The news of her disappearance was reported worldwide. An interest increased a week before her body's discovery when the LAPD released a 4-minute video recovered from an elevator security camera showing a person known to be Aliza Lamb behaving very strangely. The elevator video was posted to many sources online and view counts are in the tens of millions. However, the video is an artifact in itself with an undiscernible timestamp, and some also claim the video speed is altered. There's still very little information regarding the circumstances of Aliza's death. There are many unresolved issues, loose ends, unexplainable coincidences, and odd connections. For example, the unusual similarity to the 2005 film Dark Water. It's a remake of the 2002 Japanese film by the same name. The 2002 film includes a problematic elevator and discolored water that gushes from the building's faucets. And that eventually leads to the discovery of a girl drowned in the building's water tank. There are now films inspired by Lamb's case and a major one currently in production titled The Bringing by Sony Pictures. We talk with John Lorden about his continuing investigation in collaboration with others online who are concerned about the case, without getting too deep into the esoteric realm of ritual murder and numerology. John focuses on stripping away the implausible and then evaluating the remaining facts. John Lorden is an actor, writer, director, and performer. His work can be found at lordenarts.com. That's LORDANARTS.com. He's posted several videos on his YouTube channel, Geek and Dorks, discussing the Aliza Lamb case. He joins us today to talk more about the high strangeness surrounding the Aliza Lamb case. John, welcome to Another News.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
You've been doing a lot of online investigation about the Aliza Lamb case and posting the narratives of your findings on your YouTube channel, Geek and Dorks, in the Brain Scratch category. Now, can you give listeners an overview of the case and then what compelled you to begin looking into her alleged accidental murder?
Sure. Actually, I think my first exposure to it was seeing the actual video. If you do a search on YouTube for Aliza Lamb, you will find a video of a girl in an elevator. And when I first saw it, there was a few things that were just kind of strange about it. But namely, it's her behavior. It looks like she is, at first I thought she was fearful. She gets into the elevator. She presses several buttons for, I believe, 4 different floors. And then her behavior just kind of goes from there, and it gets stranger and stranger. She pops her head out and looks both ways. At one point, she steps out of the elevator, and she kind of waves her hand in some interesting manner. She had a very almost childlike spirit, it seemed like, during those moments. But it leads the viewer to believe a few things. I mean, it's almost like she was possibly on some type of drug, or potentially she was being followed. Potentially there was some supernatural element that's happening, you know, like a ghost keeping the elevator door open or the elevator being haunted. There's all kinds of different theories about the video. But it's strange because it was an official video, and it was released from a hotel called the Cecil Hotel. It was actually called the Cecil Hotel. Now it's called Stay on Main. But this hotel has a pretty storied past. It's the place where Richard Ramirez lived for a while and conducted several of his murders. He's the infamous Night Stalker that we all worried about in Southern California in the 1980s.
Right.
The Black Dahlia, apparently it is the hotel that she was last staying at before her murder. And there's another murder, someone that was investigating Richard Ramirez that somehow, I think, something got in his brain and he actually started conducting murders himself. There's been a few suicides that have happened there. It's just, it's a really strange place. It's also not in a great part of Los Angeles. It's pretty much in the Skid Row area. It's funny, I took a look at their new website just before this call today, and they really market themselves towards international travelers. They talk about being this kind of hip hotel and hostel. It's a place where you can get a room for yourself that includes a bathroom, but if you want to pay a lower rate, you can literally have a room that just has a bed in it, and you use shared bathrooms with other people on your floor. So it's pretty interesting, just an interesting place overall.
Yeah, they're trying to change their image right now because of negative press, but also really quite frightening past.
Definitely. Yeah, they've brought in some, it looks like a design person. They've added a lot of color to the lobby. And that's something, if you look at reviews on Yelp, that's something that you will hear from people, is that the lobby really gives you one kind of feeling that it's maybe a nice place, but as soon as you get up into the higher levels and into the rooms, you figure out that you're really not at that type of place. As a matter of fact, Elisa, on some of her social media, she thought that she was staying someplace where the she thought that Baz Luhrmann should shoot The Great Gatsby there. She was so impressed by the lobby.
Interesting. Well, there's so many oddities and bizarre trends in her case. Let's start with the video that many remember seeing back in 2013. It was released by the LAPD on February 14th, 2013, and it's video surveillance captured on one of the Cecil Hotel elevators. And you said, I think, the video's on the 14th floor. There's a four-minute video I've seen online, and I say it's a person who appears to be Eliza Lam behaving strangely because there are so many anomalies with this video. I'm uncertain about it. But can you tell listeners about the investigation that you've done on the video itself?
Sure, yeah. And luckily, that video went viral in a major, major way back in 2013. So there has been a lot of web content that's been generated by people analyzing it. And I've just been going through and basically reviewing all of their stuff, verifying it for myself, and then reporting it to my viewers.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the strange things about the four-minute video, I found an article where a professional expert in body language actually reviewed pretty much second by second what she's doing. And they did not detect that she was being fearful. They detected that it was more playful. And they actually said that it seemed like she was conducting sexual preening in a few moments, like when she's bending her hand backward in this kind of odd way. The latest developments, and really the most popular video that I've released on it, is the one about the manipulated elevator footage. I bumped into some information that the footage was actually slowed down. If you do a YouTube search for Cody Fry, he's a creator that you will see. He took the video and actually sped it back up to real time.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a little challenge in itself because the time code that is posted on the video is horribly mashed up. It's not human readable, which is kind of strange in itself because time code is used for, you know, not just for identification of what date and time that's happening. But if there was a true crime that happened, that footage might have to go to court, and that time code is a very important piece of it. The fact that the time code is fudged is already kind of strange in itself, but there's analysts that have looked at it, and based on the placement of the characters, and you can tell that there's characters flipping, they figured out where the seconds are and then the milliseconds. And they sped it back up. Cody Fry did this in particular. He sped it back up to real time. And what that does is, first of all, her actions look considerably different because they have been slowed down in the four-minute video. That already kind of changes your perception of what's happening. It's definitely less creepy when you see it sped back up into real time. some of the hand gestures that she makes, they happen within the blink of a second, so they don't look nearly as odd as they do in the slowed down footage. Something else that these investigators have also found is there has been a section in the video that's been actually edited. Right in the middle of it, there's almost 50 seconds that are missing, which is kind of strange in itself. Why was that video edited? Particularly because the video goes on for almost a full minute after she's no longer in the frame and basically shows that the elevator is working. It shows it go from floor to floor for several floors. That's also how you can verify what floor she was on, is you can actually watch the lights as it's going from floor to floor, and you can see them turn off from top down. So we know that she was up on 14 and not on her floor where she was staying, which was actually the fourth floor.
Yes, and the 14th floor, I understand, is actually the 13th floor numerically.
Yeah.
on a lot of buildings. What is your hypothesis on why this video was released and who might have edited this video?
That gets sticky for me because there's, at some point, I feel like a content creator, I feel like someone that had editing skills, someone that wanted to tell a particular story with this piece of footage got a hold of it. The time code being mashed up, the edit that happens in the middle of it, and I have trouble understanding why the police actually released that footage. I did a search on Google just for police release footage, and in almost every story, there's a direct correlation that you can make to that makes sense for why the police would release that tape. In most instances, it's because it's a piece of identifying information. You get a good, clear shot of the person. You can see what they look like right before they disappeared, what they were wearing. This footage isn't like that. This footage is very muddled, hard to really see any defining features, and that leads to one of the side theories of, is this even Elisa at all? Mm-hmm. Is this potentially an actress that did this possibly after the fact? So, yeah, it really gets strange on that front. Also, I just have to ask why they released footage of the elevator operating after she was out of frame, which I find very, very strange. And once again, kind of leads me back to a conclusion of someone engineered that piece of footage to look a certain way, to tell the viewer a certain type of story. And it's either, you know, this girl was hopped up on some type of drug, this girl was having a psychotic break, or this girl was being played with by a haunted elevator, some kind of ghost or supernatural creature in the building. As a matter of fact, there was a movie that's already been released. It's called The Journey of Elisa Lam. It's a digital short. I think it's about 40 minutes long. And they kind of retell the story. It looks like several scenes were actually filmed at the Cecil Hotel, which kind of... I find it interesting because that movie was released so quickly after the real events. That movie came out in early 2014. So, yeah, just a lot of strangeness around what is a four-minute elevator video that has obviously been tampered with. And I think that's one of the reasons why people keep coming back to this. The footage doesn't make sense. You've got a 21-year-old college student taking what could be, you know, a defining trip for her life, maybe her first foray into traveling on her own. And unfortunately, she meets this horrible demise.
What do you think about the autopsy report? I know you did some analysis of it online to your viewers.
Yeah.
Well, could you tell listeners what you found?
Basically, it was my first time reading an autopsy report, and it was interesting because it was very scientific in nature. I mean, they talk about, you know, the colorization of her skin and, you know, what her organs were like. They talk about how the consistency of them in some cases. But there are a couple things that were notable about it. In particular, I think the most notable piece is the conclusion. There's literally a section of checkboxes where they write and they just check off what their conclusion is. And they previously had an undetermined conclusion that they didn't know what caused her death, and then that was changed by the coroner to accidental. And what's really interesting is for such a scientific document, they note on it that they believe that bipolar disorder was a contributing factor to her having this accident. And just logically, that's really interesting, because I think from a scientific standpoint, how do you test for that? How do you know if someone had a bipolar break? I don't think there's any kind of chemical testing you can do to figure that out. They do know that she was on several medications. If you look through her social media, you will see that she struggled, particularly in 2012. Looks like she had a bit of a bad time. She dropped a couple of college classes, and she had a problem with her her sleeping had actually reversed, where she was up all night and she was sleeping all day. Mm. At that point, she actually changed her blog completely, almost like turning a new page. And her newer blog is much more about fashion and a little more upbeat. Though I do have to say, in general, she really liked kind of dark fiction, and there's several quotes that you see throughout it that are a little dark in nature, just about life and death. As a matter of fact, a lot of people keep pointing me back to her Tumblr and her Instagram accounts. Right before she disappeared, there were a couple postings of the tops of buildings. There's one picture of a man that's walking up the side of a building.
I saw
I actually found a picture of a woman almost naked in water on one of her social media accounts that kind of chilled me just because of how she was found.
Yes, and this connects to the films, and it's almost too obvious in a way.
Oh, yeah.
It's something very odd. Now, I want to talk about those water tanks. That's another piece of information. How tall are those water tanks, and why would it be difficult for this death to be accidental?
Yeah, those water tanks are at least 8 feet tall. I've seen kind of varying reports, but on the low end, they're 8 feet. They could be possibly 10 feet tall. They're on a riser that's up on the roof. The riser is probably another 2 feet. The thing that's tricky about it is the roof is secured by a locked door that has an alarm on it. So even if you were up there, you would have to be able to unlock the door, and that would still trigger the staff to the fact that someone was up on the roof.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a Chinese YouTube video that is out where people have conducted their own investigation, and they went there. And they figured out that you can get up to the roof pretty easily if you take the fire escape, and there is apparently no alarm system on the fire escape. Something else that leads to believing that is there's graffiti on the roof. So obviously people are getting up there that aren't authorized by the hotel. The thing that's tricky about her death being accidental into the water tank is accessing the top of the water tank. I don't know her height off the top of my head, but I know getting up on top of an 8-foot water tank was probably a little tricky for a woman of her stature. There is a ladder that's kind of leaned up against one of the water tanks, and in that Chinese YouTube video that I was mentioning, they actually show a different path. There is a building that is attached to the backside of the water tanks, and if you get up on top of that building, you're looking directly down on the top of the water tank that she was found in. One of the things that really irked me about it when I first started looking into this is their conclusion that her death is accidental, I find hard to believe because the tank was closed. So in essence, she would have had to have gotten up there somehow if she was in a paranoid schizophrenic state of some kind, find a path to the water tank, either going up that ladder or going up on this building behind it, open the lid for herself, climb into the water tank, and then figure out how to close the lid. And she was also found nude with all of her clothes and her hotel key card floating in the water with her. There's just so many questions that I think another reason why this story keeps recirculating and why people want to keep talking about it is there was a statement from the police that they had ruled out foul play. And that was later either retracted or that statement wasn't proper, because I've seen other news stories that report that they never said that. But there's certain elements of this case that you just look at and you say, how can this not involve a second person? How can this not be foul play in some way? Unless this girl figured out how to climb into this water tank, close a metal lid on top of herself and waited, you know, then removed all her clothing and waited to die in there.
It is really odd. I just heard from a news report on that day they found the body. The reporter is saying the rescue workers had to cut a hole in the tank to retrieve the body.
Yeah, and there are footage or there's pictures of the tank with the hole cut in it. They basically went into the, they had to lower the water first because I believe it was half. I think I've heard from a half to three quarters full. So they actually had to drain water out of it, and then they cut a big hole in the side of it. The access point to get in through the top is pretty narrow. I don't have exact sizing on it, but you can tell if you look at those pictures that it doesn't seem to be more than maybe a foot to a foot and a half square on top. So it's pretty narrow getting in there, and some of my YouTube commenters have suggested that probably due to the amount of bloating with her being in there for over 2 weeks, that they had to find a bigger hole to get her out.
These are 1,000-gallon tanks each up there.
Yeah.
You mentioned, John, also the graffiti near the water tanks on the top of the Cecil Hotel. Why did that catch your interest?
It was actually brought to me by several of my viewers. They were kind of asking about it. And as I'm making new videos about this case, I'm looking for new aspects to cut into. And many of them brought the graffiti to my attention. None of us really know what it means. I think it says, Specto Hercut Summa. And of course, anything with that word in there is going to grab the attention of people. Sounds like it could be derogatory sexual slang term of some kind for her. Some people have tried to translate it. There are people that are saying it's very old Latin term that has been misspelled, but it's also a derogatory term about women. I actually did a little searching just yesterday on UrbanDictionary.com, and fecto, as of, I think, 2010, has become a new slang term for a perfectly rolled joint, and the term summa is actually also a slang term for kind of like the perfect girl or perfect girlfriend. So it's interesting because of the location of it. It was written... There's basically an array that kind of connects the water tanks to each other, and it was written there. It's painted in white, and you can see that it's fairly clean, so it looks recent. There is other graffiti that is up on the roof, though, with the same words, but they're in a different order. And that graffiti is tagged with a date next to it of 2012. So I'm not certain that it's tied directly to Elisa or what happened to Elisa. But once again, it does echo the fact that other people are getting up on that roof and doing whatever they want up there. There's definitely a security problem up there, if nothing else.
Okay. Now, another strange thing, that to come down from the roof for a minute, the footage and the photos of Elisa Lam's memorial that was released in the mainstream press was kind of depressing looking. What I've seen, it's one candle on a newspaper with a dirty pink teddy bear near it.
Yeah, I saw that footage myself this morning, and there are a couple of different memorials, but that feeling that you have about that not seeming quite right is one of the things that had me continue into this investigation. When I read her Twitter feed, it didn't feel quite right. It felt like almost like a Twitter feed for a middle-aged white guy, I think I said in one of my videos.
Yes, exactly.
And some of her other social media we know has been manipulated in some way. Her Tumblr account has had postings since her demise, all the way as recently as December of 2013. So we know that someone has manipulated her social media. One of my most recent theories is possibly Elisa could have set up her Tumblr account with cued messages in advance, knowing that she was going to do this if she thought, you know, she wanted to become an internet story of some kind. It's a real dark thought, and I don't hold a lot of credence in it, but I just have to consider it because the postings on her Tumblr account for February in terms of style and substance pretty heavily match the same postings from January when we know that she was alive and making those postings.
For some listeners who aren't familiar with this particular area of social media, could you explain what Tumblr is?
Yeah, Tumblr is a social media site where, you know, it's just like Twitter. It's a bit more of a blog format. You can choose different formats. Unfortunately, the format that Elisa chose is very clunky. It doesn't show everything quite chronologically. But if you go to it, you can hit the history tab, and that'll at least group things by month. It's a bit more visually driven, so you usually see a lot of chunks of pictures, and then you can also make posts and write posts in it, which she did frequently.
And these photos, you also noted, some of them look like stock photos.
Yeah. One of the things that really kind of got to me about her social media is a lack of pictures of her. All of the pictures that I've seen of her have been from media sources, and even if I count all those up, I think it's less than 10. On her own social media, even on her Twitter profile, there is a drawn picture for the main photo. On one of her, I can't remember if it's her Tumblr or one of her other, maybe her Snapchat account, it looks like she might be taking picture of her feet. The closest thing that there is to a selfie in any of this media is a full body shot, but the head's been cut off. So looking at all that, looking at the types of pictures that were posted, yeah, it really did strike me that basically if I wanted to create an account that looked like that and try to make it look like it belonged to someone else, it wouldn't be very hard. I would, you know, do a Google search, take a bunch of those images and smack them into a format kind of like those look. It's strange because on some of her social media, she writes a lot, and then on these other accounts, you know, they're definitely more picture-driven, but even the photos, they kind of make you scratch your head a little bit.
As many other aspects of this case do, and this also ties into these fake social media accounts, you often see suspected shooters in possible false flag scenarios that have fake social media accounts. And
that's definitely an interesting point to it. And for a long time, I was really running down the road of, I don't know if Elisa Lam really exists. I don't know if that could have been, you know, someone that was made up for the intent of possibly hiding another crime. I mean, if you think about it, if I make up a character, put together a couple fake social media accounts, and that murder gets blamed on that character is the victim. The real victim then goes on as a missing person in Los Angeles, which we have over 3,000 of every year.
Oh, really interesting there, because I often reference David Politi's work, who wrote the Missing 411 series. He wrote a series of books about people who go missing in national parks.
Oh, really?
Yes.
No, I'm not familiar.
Oh, you'd love it, I think. And there are a few urban cases that he mentions, but he didn't focus too much into that, which I think could fill up another series of books. But it does strike me as something in this area. And I want to go into some of your thoughts about who would fake such an event, or why would this occur? Who stands, you know, to profit from this?
Let me give you a little leading up to that. When I watched all the news footage, most of it was shot from across the street. And, you know, there used to be a time in America when reporters would actually be allowed on crime scenes, and I think it was a pretty awesome check and balance. I don't think that we would have nearly the amount of run-ins with the police as we do now if reporters were given that type of access. So when I was watching all the footage, it kind of occurred to me, if I was going to produce something like this, A, could I do it? You know, I would need to have the hotel's backing. I would need someone there to help me coordinate it. I would need to rent a fire truck. I would need to rent a bunch of extras and costume them up. But it is feasible that I could essentially have a film shoot up on that roof without any cameras, let the press look at it from across the street, or even their aerial views from helicopters, which if you look at this footage, that's pretty much all that you get. And then if you had a police relay, if you had someone that was going down as an official spokesperson for the crime scene talking to the reporters across the street, you could probably contain that environment pretty well and pull off a fake like that. In that case, why would someone do that? Like I mentioned before, if you were possibly hiding the murder of someone else, the Cecil Hotel in particular, I think on their current website, you can see that they're shying away from being a murder hotel, but in other aspects of the internet, they're very popularly known as a murder hotel.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard that Elisa's room is actually booked a year in advance, that you can't even stay in the room that she was staying in because it's so popular. There are people that do take murder tours. I used to work on Hollywood Boulevard, and I would see the buses all the time. There are people that specifically take these types of tours. So the Cecil having some notoriety in that area could be profitable to them. We already know of one movie, the digital short that I mentioned before, The Journey of Elisa Lam, that was seemingly shot there. I would assume that the Cecil was paid some location fees for that. We now know that the Cecil Hotel is being considered for the next season of American Horror Story, or they're going to base it on a hotel like the Cecil. The story has already rippled into other TV shows. It showed up as a plot on Castle, and we now know that Sony Pictures is putting money behind a major production officially about the Elisa Lam story. When you think back to, I think it was 1999, when the Blair Witch Project was kicking around, there was some fascinating social media happening around that project. They had a website that you would go to that was made to look real. There was nothing that said it was for a film. It showed interviews from, we now know them as actors, but they looked just like news clippings of people talking about these horrible events that happened around the Blair Witch. And right up until the movie debuted, a good chunk of the public didn't know if all that social media was fake or if it was real. That was part of what made that movie so popular. When you think of how much Hollywood could make off of a story like this, you know, it becomes feasible. I mean, this movie, particularly horror movies, they're made relatively cheaply and they have a large profit percentage. So I wouldn't, you know, it gets unbelievable for me in a couple of places. Like, for instance, there's a real coroner's report. I verified Dr. Yulai Wang. He actually appears in an episode of a crime show that I like. So I know that he's real, the guy that conducted the autopsy. There are some places where it feels like the rubber meets the road and this is a real murder. And that's kind of why, for a while, I was also stuck on the thought that maybe Elisa was made up to cover up a different murder. I'm pretty sure that a body was removed from there. The autopsy is authentic. We know that. It was released to media sources.
Our guest is John Lorden. We're talking about the high strangeness of Elisa Lam's case. We'll be right back after this break. Just tuned in, we're speaking with John Lorden about the multiple oddities surrounding Elisa Lam's case.
What is worth noting is the autopsy states that they should do further toxicology testing, and only the preliminary toxicology report is part of that package. Several other media sources say that they're going to release the newer toxicology report when it's done, and that never occurs. So it does seem like once they ruled it as accidental, it kind of feels like the LAPD just put it on hold, like there was no reason to look into that case any further.
Also, the family of Elisa Lam and their response, what are your thoughts about her family and authenticity in that area?
Yeah, I've done a video where I've looked at her sister's social media also, and her sister's actually looked even thinner than Elisa's, and there was only a few mentions on Twitter where she was actually calling out for help. I believe she tweeted the Young Turks asking them for help when she thought her sister was missing. Since then, I've had one great thing about this has been the YouTube community. I've had several people reach me directly, do more investigation, and kind of send me those findings. I've even had someone that basically shot a 30-minute vlog just for me, and he went into Sarah, Elisa's sister, went into her account on Facebook and did a bunch of digging around. And the thing that strikes me about the family is they show up in Los Angeles when they think she's still a missing person. You can see them in footage of there's an LAPD spokesperson that's talking about Elisa gone missing, and they're essentially huddled behind the spokesperson. And I think we've all seen enough crime shows and real accounts where when someone's missing, it's pretty hard not to get the parent to grab that microphone and beg for that person to be returned. That does not seem to happen in this case. The parents remain extremely tight-lipped. There is very little media about their opinion or comment about any of this. You can find an article that her father wasn't happy with the autopsy report, but really that's about it. Going back to when we were talking about the memorials to her, they own a restaurant in Vancouver, and they actually, I believe that picture that you were talking about with the one teddy bear was the start of her memorial. If you do a Google image search, you can see that that memorial actually grows from there on the front door of their restaurant. I've also confirmed that Sarah has gone on with her life. She got married the following year. I took a look at that footage, and it looks legit. The parents are there. Sarah's there. And through that, we found Sarah's husband, Elfin Chan, and just did a light touch on his social media, took a look at him, and he actually asked for help quite a bit throughout Elisa's disappearance. So
it's tough. It's a really difficult thing to wrap around here, but it's still important to keep gathering information and facts. And I really like the way you marshaled other YouTube users to help out on this, John. That's really cool that you did that, and I think
it's been amazing. And even this interview happening right now, it's amazing to me how many people really care about what happened there. And I think that also speaks to the fact that none of us feel like we have the truth.
Indeed, and I have to shout out to assistant producer Ryan Rosada out in the Bronx for giving me a heads up on your work. I know about the case, and I thought this is. It couldn't get any stranger, and I didn't do the work to investigate behind the official reports, but when you start to scratch the surface, there are all these missing pieces and odd connections that just seem to continue, and it gets even more bizarre when you start to look at the movies that are connected to it, and for example, Dark Water, which is the 2002 Japanese version, but the 2005 version from the same name was a U.S. version right over here in supposed to take place right over here in Roosevelt Island. Yes, and it's interesting. But share some of that information in the weird connection.
Yeah, that was one of the things that, you know, I've done a little writing in my time, and when I first started hearing about this story, there was some things that just felt like it was written, and that's one of the connections was these events that the hotel, the people in the hotel literally noticing something's wrong with their water, a body being discovered in the water tank up on top, those events very closely mimic that film, Dark Water. And then Dark Water has a couple of instances, like there's a character in it that's named Cece, which some people connect to the Cecil Hotel. There was so many things that were coinciding. There is a test for tuberculosis that's called the Lam Elisa test.
I definitely want to get into that. The names in that film, the 2005 film, the mother's name was Dahlia.
Yeah.
And the daughter was Cece. You're right. That is strange.
Yeah, yeah. So there was this feeling that I kept getting. And then when you connect that with Elisa Lam also being the name of this other test, It felt like something some Hollywood dude would sit down and say, wait, you guys are asking me to make up a story? Okay, here's a story. You know, writers like to wink in their stories a lot. And there were so many instances in this case when I'd run into information and I was like, this is a wink. I mean, it almost feels insulting at certain times when you're looking at this info.
Regarding the Lam Elisa, can you explain that? Because what I have seen online is the CDC announced that there is an outbreak of TB in LA, and the test used to detect tuberculosis in humans is called Lam Elisa, and it's a short for a longer Latin name.
Yeah. I mean, you're basically spot on with it. And there's another connection in that Elisa went to school at in BC. I can't remember the name of the school, but they apparently deal with certain aspects of tuberculosis, and there was some rumor that they could be developing a strain of tuberculosis, and perhaps Elisa was sent to conduct some type of human trials on people in the Skid Row area. It is a little strange. Apparently, Los Angeles was not a planned stop for her. She was coming to San Diego, and then she was going to travel up the coast, but it seems like she kind of plugged in stopping in L.A., and then when you pull that together with the news story of the TB outbreak that was happening among the homeless community right around the Cecil Hotel during that same time frame, it kind of does, you know, pull your focus down that way. Is there a possibility that she had something to do with some type of human trials? And then if she did someone have to quiet that down and cover it up by taking care of her?
That's interesting, John, because she was not a registered student at that university.
Yeah, at the time she took her vacation, you're right, she had no classes registered.
I think she just took classes. I don't think she declared anything.
I haven't been able to find anything that connects her to those types of classes. And, you know, there's theories that range all kinds of, you know, she's MK Ultra, you know. Actually, the video that you had sent me just a little bit ago is kind of tapping into another theory that my viewers have been talking about, that there was some attempt of mind control, that there was I think it's been called the God laser or the God device used on her brain that essentially made her act this way and then kill herself.
Wow, I didn't even consider that realm, but at this point, you know, you have to look at the information coming in. But the Lam Elisa name, that it's just too much.
It does feel like it's too much. Now, it is worth noting, Lam is a pretty common surname. When I went looking for her sister, I did a search on LinkedIn for Sarah Lam, and it came back with over 250 results. Elisa is, you know, it's an interesting name. I don't hear it too often.
Right, short for Elizabeth, probably.
I would think so, but I haven't even seen anything officially confirming that. And she seems to refer to herself a lot as L, literally just the letter L. Her Twitter account, I believe, says LL. A lot of her blogs, you'll see that she signs off as LL.
Which is another occult element as well, the Saturnalia cult, which is EL.
Oh, yeah.
You mentioned something about Corduroy Magazine in terms of the fake social media and the fake pages. I'd like to, if you could you talk about that?
Sure. When I went looking through her Twitter account, I started looking at people that she was connected to. And I think the name was Tim Chan, if I remember correctly. He seemed to be someone that responded to her a few times, so I took a look into his account. And his account is active, looks like a real Twitter account, but it notes this Corduroy Magazine. And I went and took a look at that website, and essentially at the time that I was looking at it, it looked like a real magazine. There were several buttons along the bottom where you could order back issues, sign up to receive the magazine, and when you'd click on all those buttons, they wouldn't go anywhere. They basically would just bring you back to the same front page. And, you know, I've seen a couple of knockoff websites before where, you know, the designer basically doesn't take the time to make the other pages. If they're making it as a joke website or something, they'll put buttons down there, but they don't go anywhere. And that's kind of where this Corduroy Magazine left me. I was just like, is this website even real? How can you have a magazine if you have no way to buy it? So what's been interesting is recently I've been hearing from my viewers, and I went back and checked for myself. It has been updated. It's like it's a website in development, but you still cannot find a way to order issues. I have a feeling that I think it's more of a social media thing. I think Corduroy Magazine probably exists in Facebook, and he's making postings there and considering himself a magazine. I can see from his social media, he gets into fashion parties and stuff like that, and we know that Elisa was definitely interested in fashion, so it makes sense that she's connected to that. But the Corduroy Magazine website in itself is, yeah, it's pretty interesting to have a magazine that you can't buy.
That's really strange. There's another film that you mentioned that's coming out. It's called The Bringing, and that's based on Elisa Lam's case. But you also sent an email to the director of that film and urging them to use the attention created by the film to further investigate Elisa Lam's case. And I thought that was really commendable and a smart thing to do.
Yeah, I wish, you know, I wish I could hear back on that. But just knowing that it's going to happen, is it kind of gives me a little light at the end of the tunnel. You know, I know that once the public in a large way is brought this story again, that they're going to ask all these questions again, they're going to go looking at this media again, and hopefully at some point someone's going to say, hey, look, this excuse that you guys gave us on her autopsy doesn't hold up. As a matter of fact, Dr. Yuai Wang has been litigated against because of his autopsy findings previously. So it's going to be interesting once the big wheel in Hollywood starts drumming up attention around this again. I'm a little trepidatious, I guess I would say, about the plot. You know, it sounds like they're kind of mashing together the story of Richard Ramirez with Elisa Lam. They're essentially going to plan on it being about an investigator that's looking into the case of Elisa Lam, and I think they get kind of wrapped up in it.
Yeah. Oh, yes. The investigator starts to lose it because there's so many such high strangeness around it. It's almost modeled after you.
Boy, yeah. I hope I don't go down that road. But yeah, you're right. I would love to have some more insight into what they're planning with that. I really hope that they can strike a good balance about the realities of the case. And then I know that they want to make a horror movie, and there's going to be supernatural elements that they are going to have to expand in their own way. But I hope the bones of the story just remain true. And I think if they do that, that would at least be a good service to Elisa and hopefully get public perception to crack that back open.
Has anything happened to you as a result of the investigation that you're continuing here on her case, such as some of the websites that you've publicly noted or start to change or start to be tweaked a little by somebody, a webmaster somewhere?
Outside of the corduroy thing, not really. I would say the biggest kind of mystery spot in this right now for me is the Invisible Light Agency connection.
Mm-hmm.
I found a couple of notations about a company that was either residing in the Cecil Hotel or directly across the street from it at the time that this all happened, called the Invisible Light Agency. Also worth noting, the term Cecil actually means blind, which I found in some of my research, and has become a popular baby name over the past couple of years.
Right.
But the Invisible Light Agency in itself is a huge question. If you try to dig into finding information about it, you will find practically nothing. They seem to be out of business at this point. I have had a couple people that have told me about employees that worked at the Invisible Light Agency, and these appear to be Hollywood guys that have gone to work on horror movies. So that, you know, if we're considering the aspect of this potentially being a hoax of some kind to drum up, you know, a new Hollywood legend, the Invisible Light Agency sure seems suspect.
Yes. Now, they're supposed to reside in the hotel?
I've seen both. I've seen a notation that they were actually in the hotel, and then I've seen another address that has them directly across the street from it.
That's really strange. Now, why do you think Elisa's case got such massive attention internationally? You spoke about that too in one of your videos, that there's so many missing persons cases. Why did this go, you know, viral?
Yeah, I was wondering about that, and I still kind of do. There is an official LAPD response about that, and they say because it was an international missing person that they treated it differently. They were contacted by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police about Elisa going missing. But it is strange to me that they fired up their whole spokespeople, their press engine, they did television. I mean, that's before we knew that she was murdered. Mm-hmm. This is just in the time frame in between when she was missing for a couple days. So it did strike me as kind of odd why there's 3,000 that go missing a year. We don't see this type of press around all of those. Why is this so different? We didn't know that there was a crime committed at that point. At that point, she might have just gone offline from her parents for a couple days. So it did, and still does. It doesn't sit perfectly well with me that you know, they jumped in like they did at the time that they did, unless there was some potential for them to want to control the perception of what was going to happen. pretty much 5 days after they had their big meeting with her parents on television, you know, they found her body.
Right. And some people say that for some reason, the people who are running the mainstream press want to get words and symbols and memes into the public consciousness. This is one way to do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then that does resonate with me pretty well. I mean, there are so many connections with the terms that are being used, like we talked about just from the movie Darkwater and those that are being pulled through. Now this is going to spawn, it already is. I'm part of the media that has spawned from it. I'm watching creators that have seen my stuff and are now making new things based off of that. There's just this never-ending chain of lore that has clubbed around this story. And that, in a way, kind of makes it difficult to even find the truth. I can tell you, I've bumped into so many websites where people kind of go rambling on tangents, and all of a sudden you'll hear a new piece of evidence, and you're like, is that true? And you can't find anything to back it. There's a point where it's almost like this story is lifting off into something different than truth.
Agreed, and it's definitely taken off in the minds of writers in the movie industry all over the world.
Yeah, it's a very captivating thing. It's not every day that you find footage. I mean, I watch, you know, Ghost Hunters and Ghost Adventures. I like watching shows like that. And you never get to see really good footage of something where you're like, hey, there's something supernatural that's happening there. And this footage of Elisa in the elevator, some people can look at it and say, that seems to be supernatural. There seems to be, why is the elevator acting that way? Why is she acting that way? Something is really wrong about this footage. And, that kind of stuff doesn't get released all the time. Once again, makes you wonder why the police released that footage. And if she was up on the 14th floor, she also took an elevator to get up there. Where's that footage? That footage might actually show who she was with.
So the LAPD must probably knows a lot more about this case than they're letting on, which is really sad. But I wanted to just mention that I was watching some footage from the 2002 Japanese version of Dark Water, mm-hmm. and I didn't watch the film, but they show a woman, this Asian woman, in an elevator. The camera's behind her, like the surveillance footage almost, and she's pressing the buttons on the elevator. So that in itself, you know, with the water tank death in that movie, it's like this was planned. It's like somebody created this to mimic these films in order for some, in order for something to occur.
There is also, in pretty recent history, there does seem to be several cases of bodies being found in water towers. But I can tell you, in those other cases, they're known murders. This seems to be the only one I can find where that's being used as a place to hide a body, and the police are saying it was an accidental death.
Even further on a limb, there's a lot of discussion about, could she be playing the elevator game?
Yeah.
And tell listeners what that is.
You know, I actually haven't dived into that quite hard enough to really comment on it yet. It's another aspect that my viewers keep mentioning, this elevator game. You probably know more about it than I do at this point.
From what I've read, it's a game where you have to be in a building with at least 10 floors, and you have to hit the floors in a sequence. And at one point, a woman walks in on one of the floors, and you're not supposed to look at her or talk to her at all. Otherwise, you know, in quotes, she's yours. But if you successfully play this game, you walk out of the elevator into an alternate reality, like a parallel universe.
Interesting. So it's almost like a twist on Bloody Mary, kind of a new age Bloody Mary.
It is, and I'm not sure I would test it out.
Yeah, no, I don't, especially not at the Cecil. You know, a lot of my viewers are saying, hey, John, why don't you go there and shoot a segment? And I'll be honest with you, I don't want to go there. It's not in a great part of town, but even outside of that, there is something about that building. People jump out of the windows of that building. People that are known murderers have stayed there for long periods of time. It's just, you know, maybe someday I'll go and do the news footage style and shoot from across the street, but I think that's about as close as I want to get to that place.
Where are you at in terms of continuing investigating this, John? How far are you going to go?
We actually just touched into it. Basically, at this point, I've ran about as far as I can with trying to keep it on a practical investigation, and I'm going to start looking more into the fringe elements. For example, that God laser that we talked about, you just helped me a bit with the elevator game. I'll definitely be talking about that in a future episode. But there's other aspects. For example, I think it's her most popular tweet, was about an invisibility cloak, that the military was working on an invisibility cloak. And that is something that my viewers keep bringing up to me also. So I'll probably do a video on that pretty soon. I've seen other videos about military technology like this, where you can, almost like Harry Potter's cloak, you can essentially hide yourself. And there are people that swear that they can see anomalies in the video and they believe that there's someone else interacting with her.
I was thinking about the invisibility cloak in that, you know how people sense somebody around you? So the cloak just tricks the brain on some level that your eyes can't see someone, but there are other senses that men and women have to detect a living being near you, and you have the weight of the person. So if there's a rickety floor or something, you're going to hear that.
Right, right. Yeah, so I'm definitely going to reach more into the fringe elements. Something that has been kind of cool about my viewers and commenters is no one's really flaring anyone else. Everyone pretty much seems to be of a mindset that we know that there's a mystery here, and they're really respecting each other's opinions quite a bit. So I'm going to try to do the same and take all of those opinions, even ones that maybe I don't believe so strongly in myself, and just run them through some research and see if I can find any credence to those opinions. So, yeah, definitely a bit more fringe coming up on future installments.
Excellent. And can you tell listeners again where to find your videos and your website?
Sure. The easiest way to find me is at lordanarts.com. That's LORDANARTS.com. And from there, I've got a quick link to geekanddorks.tv. Geek and Dorks is spelt a little weird, so it's probably hard for people to remember. But from lordanarts.com, you can get to geekanddorks.tv. And Brain Scratch is the name of the show. It's its own playlist in YouTube. You can also search Brain Scratch, all one word. And there's a couple of other Brain Scratches, but Brain Scratch Elisa Lam will pull you right to one of my several videos on this.
Well, John Lorden, I want to thank you for being on Another News. It's been really interesting.
Thank you, Jeff. And yeah, thank you for the new insight into the elevator game. That's already got my brain going.
Excellent. All right. Talk to you soon.
Take care.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Join me again on Dark Matter Radio.